This is CliffCentral.com.
Every festive we wake up with the damn sparrows. But Nzala, no, she's up at 1 p.m. Kari. And we're like, but where you been though? Here opening pots like you cooked.
A combination meal. Inspired by seven colors, there's something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com. Thank you so much for having us on. My name is Sia Sangweni in for Gareth Cliff and the team, actually, this morning. It is the Friday edition of the Gareth Cliff Show. We're just chinchilling. We're hanging out. Gareth is in Mozambique. Spoke to him in the first hour, finding out how he's enjoying his time. He's been telling us about everything that he's up to in Mozambique, everything he'll still be doing this afternoon. He's actually heading back to South Africa. He's flying back here. Ben is... I don't know if Ben is still on his way to Cape Town. I presume, and I'd like to believe he actually has arrived in Cape Town ahead of the Rugby Sevens that's taking place this weekend. And Gord Laws is here.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey.
You're not alone, Sia. You've got me.
I was going to sing a song.
About having me?
No, about not being alone. And I just thought...
There's also some semblance of Amanda. We've got the shadow of Amanda in the studio. She's not happy, man. I was actually, like, while the song was playing, I ran and got some coffee, and I was, like, thinking to myself, okay, cool. So I arrived late, apologized, I spieled on about that a little bit. We got stuck in it. We got sucked back into a Weinstein hole. Mm-hmm. Like... Actually, it's time to just suck it up and accept the fact that it's the fucking weekend, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we need to, like, just suck up and not have hangovers. Well, we have them, but yes. Just deal with them and be positive and be rainbows. But Amanda is not happy this morning.
I just want to... Please indulge me here for the next minute and a half as I go on about how great I am right now. Okay. So I have had quite a crazy bit of a week.
Okay.
It started off very mildly. I thought, here we go. Here's another week. Things are slowing down. It's the end of the year. Then I actually realized, even though Gareth told me this ages ago, then it finally popped up in the calendar. I was like, oh, shucks, Gareth is actually going to Mozambique.
Yeah.
So I had to configure things around that. Get you in, prep guests, let them know. Gareth won't be in, but the rest of the team is in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tuesday, I then get told that I had to...
So everyone else is off having a jaw, and the repercussion of that is that you have to work like double
exactly.
as hard.
Exactly.
So Tuesday?
Oh, Tuesday, I got roped into... Yes, Tuesday I got roped into a work thing that was happening in Pretoria. Mm-hmm. So I had to go and represent for the brand. There I was. It was like at night in Pretoria. We were doing some interviews for one of the shows on the station, 360 Biz. It was this swanky awards ceremony. So recording that, and I think we were recording interviews up until, and I shit you not, 12:45. So I actually left Pretoria at 12:45. I got home at about...
You live this side, eh?
Yeah.
So obviously, Cliff Central Studios, for those people who don't know, it's in Rivonia.
Mm-hmm. So I had to drive 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I ended up at home at 12:30. And then thought, you know what, while I'm up, because in our complex, a guy who lives there was up as well. And I thought, hey, why don't we just drink? So I had a couple of drinks.
You know?
And, you know, because I deserved it after working so long and hard.
I just don't have it in me.
No, you just have to enjoy life in that way. I ended up falling asleep at 1:30. Woke up a couple of hours later, came in, did the show, powered through the day. That was Wednesday. And actually went home, had to come back here for a new show on the station, Country Duty, that was at 7 p.m. So I was there with the show until 8 p.m., had to leave here, go and attend a friend's farewell dinner, and then because stupid Sia does Year of Yes, someone was like, let's go out again, there's this amazing TV show, and they're filming their finale, we should go there. I was like, okay, yes, because there's a free bar.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I went there. Ended up drinking up until 1 a.m.
But you have youth on your side.
Well, that's why I'm looking at you
you're
guys
young and
who
pretty.
Are hungover.
But Amanda's also young and pretty.
And
I'm
just
not
don't
only
get
one.
It.
I'm in my mid.
No.
Even, I'm 36. I don't know if
Listen,
that's bordering on late 30s.
God
and
laws,
I'm like hurting.
I'll make the unfair comparison. Janet Jackson gave birth to a live human actual baby at 50 years old.
Okay, but she's Janet Jackson. She's got that team we spoke about earlier.
I said unfair comparison, but I'll use it to you as well. So I also went out last night, actually, funnily enough, bumped into Anthea Gardner, who's quite a hoot.
Yes.
Had a few drinks, and I'm back here again. Why are you guys looking like death warmed up?
Because
I think I look pretty good for an hour and a half sleep.
It's not that you don't look good, Amanda. It's that you look like you're ready to bite anyone's head off that speaks to you wrong.
Yeah.
It was just you, because you came in here and you were like, well, I got 3 hours sleep. Yeah. Like, that's unnecessary.
Don't go rubbing your wealth in the face of other people.
Literally, you just walked in here and you just said that stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't bragging. I was complaining.
Come on, folks. Just like, hi, Taylor. It's fine. It's a Friday.
But you got to party through, man. You have to party through. The only way to deal with it is to party through, re-party.
Yeah.
And just stay strong. It's also, it's December Friday vibe. So, like, if there's ever a time where you can get away with a bit of an in-week bubble-ass, it's this sort of time of the year for most people.
But how much did you, for example, drink last night? I think you guys drank a heck of a lot, too.
It went pear the same way it always does. Mm-hmm. Me and my homie Gumpy, his wife's away, and so he's chilling, and, like, we want to just hang out. I said to him, I'm well tired from doing the show yesterday. And then working the whole day afterwards. I'm keen on a bit of a steakhouse vibe. And we deliberately started early so that we could be done early. I was like, I'm tired from doing the show yesterday. I've got to be well rested for the show today. Mm-hmm. Let's have an early dinner. So I picked him up at 6. We were at the dinner place by 6:30, and we had like an beer. Let's have an beer, Gumpy. And he was like, yes, we should have an beer. So we had an beer, and then while we were eating, they brought us another beer. And then we'd finished eating, and we'd each have 3 beers, and we decided to have whiskey. Ooh. And then a shot happened, and I was like, this is foolish. We must stop this behavior right in its tracks.
Oh, no.
And so we were done there by 9:30, and we were like, cool, I'm going to take him home and drop him off at home. It's on my way home, mm-hmm. and that'll be the end of a lovely little bromantic man date for the night. And then he said, well, why don't you pop in and we'll have another whiskey? So I was like, well, of course, it's only 9:30. I mean, what's the harm? So I got home eventually at midnight.
As one does.
Feeling a little bit like 3 sheets were well and truly to the wind. Grabbed a beer out of the fridge and had a catch up with my lady who lives in Spain. And
what's the time difference there?
1 hour they're behind.
Okay.
Yeah. And she just gotten back from some missioning around and doing like, it's like weird there because you do a lot of walking if you, you know, some people do have cars and whatever, but mostly you do a lot of walking in Barcelona and a lot of stuff you just go do at night. Like she needed to go buy a pot plant and get something for her dogs. And so she went like shopping at like 8 p.m. and got back at like 10:30 p.m. Anyway.
That's normal, right?
Point is I had a catch up with my lady and before you know it, it was like 20 to 1.
Oh, shucks.
And then, yeah, it took a little while to get to sleep. And the next thing, the alarm clock's going off and I'm texting you. But the point is not to complain. The point is that if you're going to poos a Thursday, you're going to do it in December. And then you got to suck it up and you just got to re-party on Friday. So I want to know, what is the jaw looking like for you and for the listeners? What is the jaw this weekend? Obviously, I'm going to the Sevens, which I mentioned yesterday. But uh-huh. I'm going tomorrow morning. I'm flying to Cape Town. I'm going to jaw the Sevens the whole weekend. I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be hectic, though. That's a proper marathon.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, because it's like 10:30, 11 in the morning until 7, 8 p.m., 2 straight days in a row. Costume party drinking extravaganza. And I've got to do a bit of work there.
Oh, man.
And also be a bit drunk.
Well, yeah, so let us know what you're actually up to. You can WhatsApp us 079-748-2090, or you can send us a message on our WeChat official account or even tweet us at cliffcentral.com. Firstly, I think we're getting the party started here in studio because the music is good. We actually have Dominic Neal, who's coming in at 7:30. He's been like releasing amazing, amazing music. You know, he entered Idols back in 2012 and he's now just collaborating with awesome people, you know, some African artists. He's released and done some music with, for example, like DJ Kent. So I'm excited to chat to him in just a bit. He's a nice weekend starter. And you know what I actually love? Like, someone named and shamed you here, Gord. Warren says, just because we played Timo ODV a few minutes ago, he says, guys, maybe since Gord is in today, we can play a little less rave.
I don't mind a bit of rave, but yes.
And it's a Friday.
Yeah, which, is that any Warren in particular?
I have no...
Just Warren.
Just Warren.
Well, Warren, you know me too well, but I don't think that if it was my choice, I was listening on the way into Lamb of God, and I'm not sure that
Lamb of God?
Yeah, brilliant band. Brilliant band from Richmond, Virginia. Amazing band.
I'm assuming they are not like a gospel
band. No, they're not a gospel band. Anyway, okay. I was listening to Lamb of God on the way in just to like keep the eyelids from falling. I've bitched enough about my morning.
Yeah.
It's boring and no one cares. But suffice it to say, I had droopy eyelids and that's dangerous. So I was like Lamb of God at max. And I know no one other than me, aside from a tiny population percentile of metalheads, wants to start their Friday with Lamb of God this morning. So thanks, Warren, but I think I'll let see, I choose the music today.
And I have to say, I actually picked Timo ODV.
Yeah, that was fine. Man.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice. Like, listen, any sort of day when I have full control of the show and I, A, don't play any Beyonce music and B, don't make any Oprah references.
What do you think of the Eminem song with Beyonce?
Well, we had a conversation about it on the show when it was released.
Walk on
because
Water.
We just found out that like Ben hates Eminem.
Oh, God. I've got an Eminem tattoo. There.
Yes, you do.
I know. Eminem's one of the greatest musicians of all time, man, and a huge influence on me.
Just another
I dabble in a bit of rap, always have, bit of battling and a little bit of drum and bass emceeing. Done it since I've done it for 20 years.
Do you just like...
A freestyle, man.
I was about to say, what do the cool kids call it? Like, what's spit a verse?
Yeah, exactly. So I used to battle on hip-hop when I was in my 20s a lot. I remember I was the only white guy in the top 60 in the Sprite MC Africa Battle Championship.
Shut the front door.
Came third. Lost to Snaz the Dictator in the semifinal. And that was like a competitive thing, but yeah, I've always rhymed.
Good. What was your rap name?
My rap name still is Heavy G.
Heavy G.
Mm. Oh. Yeah, I play with a crew called Initiate Drum and Bass, and another crew in Cape Town. My DJ is Multi Crisis, and I play drum and bass shows and I freestyle rap. And it's
did you ever release any official music?
A couple of tunes.
Please tell me this is on YouTube.
I did a song I guested on a song on a Pestroy album once. I've done a song with DJ Redwood called Represent. I don't like recording music as much as I like freestyling because it's too much to remember and you never sound exactly how you want to, whereas if you're just freestyling. Point is, Eminem is an absolute genius. I'm a massive hip-hop fan and there are so many great MCs out there. Eminem is just lyrically, in terms of his compositions, he is absolutely a complete and total genius. And like... It's subjective, so you might not like the sound of his voice, you might not like all of his songs, but just musically and lyrically and conceptually, like his rhymes are just next level clever. It's so much more than just keeping on the beat and having a rhyming couplet. He rhymes inside his rhymes, the double and triple entendres that he drops. I mean, the oak is...
Entendre?
Yeah, like when you say one thing but it means another. Like,
isn't that not like a pun?
It's sort of like a pun, but more clever.
Oh.
You gotta actually look at his lyrics and just if you really kind of, he's always gonna have on his albums, he's gonna have those club bangers where it's just like jawl party and a bit of humor.
Yeah.
But some of his stuff that he writes is just like amazingly clever. So I'm just a huge Eminem fan. So I respect Ben's right not to like him. No, for example, there's other great musicians.
He his whole explanation is not justified at all.
There's other great musicians that are like, for example, I've never been able to get into Bowie or Prince, rest their souls. I fully appreciate that they are brilliant musicians. I've just never been able to enjoy the music.
This is actually an interesting topic then. Who are some of the musicians you just never got into?
You know, and this is a weird thing. It struck me as very weird, and I've been thinking about it. It's weird, more and more weird.
Yeah.
Most of the musicians, with the exception of Lemmy from Motorhead, most of the musicians who've died in the last year or two or three are super popular and I respect them. I've never been into them. Could never get into Chris Cornell and Soundgarden. And I'm a big metal guy.
Same.
worshipped Rage Against the Machine, but never liked Audioslave, which is when Rage Against the Machine's vocalist who raps, Zach De La Rocha, left the band. He was replaced
never
by Chris Cornell.
I'll be honest.
They got the same band, Chris Cornell singing, changed the name of the band. Didn't like it. Soundgarden didn't like it. David Bowie never could get into it. And I've got friends who love it and play it for me all the time. And I'm just like, guys, it's not going to happen.
Just don't get
Linkin
the vibe.
Park. Like, I love metal, and I don't like
really?
Them. Yeah, I've always found Chester Bennington's voice.
Okay, I did go through a bit of a Linkin Park phase.
You know, when they first came out, they were kind of quite, that was a very trendy style of music, this new metal style. And as their career progressed, they moved away from it and started becoming a little bit more kind of experimental and not so much genre typecasted. Mm-hmm. But at the time of new metal, I was listening to Slipknot. And I was listening to a band that sounded a lot like Linkin Park, only a lot sort of, for me, more authentic and clever, called El Nino. So I was always like, well, you know, like the watered down versions getting on the radio. But no disrespect to them. I saw them live. They were amazing live.
But it's just not your cup of tea.
Prince,
that's all it is.
I could not, like, again, Prince gives me, he creeps me out. The thing, his voice, the whole look, he like freaks me out. Like,
Amanda's nodding, why are you nodding as well?
I totally agree. That guy is shame.
But they say like
he's crazy.
What's the creepy
they
part?
They say, well, he just comes across like a little, like small creepy pimp thing, like the velvet suits and the weird hair and the whole squeaky voice. He's like just singing about like the songs are all just like about vivid sex, and his voice is like, look, and again, I know he plays like Cream. Get on top. Cream.
Yes.
I'm like, but like, again, I know that he's like this massive musical prodigy. He plays like every instrument. He composes his music like in. So that's the thing with Eminem. Like, I understand why some people just don't go for it. It's not your thing.
Oh.
But Eminem's a genius.
I hope this is the right clip. But there's this ridiculous pitch. I don't need, or tone, that Prince reaches, that is just insane. So here, I think this is a clip of like him, what, a 6-octave range singer, they call him. Let's see. Is that
all
like
I
what
could
freaks
make out,
you out?
All I could make out from the lyric is, when our bodies twitch!
Ooh.
And it's like, okay, I don't want to think about your weird sex life, Prince.
It's the Mariah Carey-ness of it all.
So, bands I never got into that are super famous and whatever. And also, and not that I dislike them, and if you were to put it on, I would be completely fine to sit in the room and just carry on with my life, but I never got into the Beatles. Never have had a Beatles album, never went through a Beatles phase. It's just from living on Earth, you know all the words to every Beatles song ever, but just because you...
I think I just... Yellow Submarine was one of their songs, right?
Yeah.
Or was that Paul McCartney's song?
No, dude, every song you've ever heard that you know, but you don't know how or why, is the Beatles.
Yeah.
But speaking of like legends and music from around then, I'm going to Bryan Adams tomorrow and I'm so excited.
Bryan Adams was the first proper concert I ever went to.
I cannot wait.
It was at Sun City and I was literally, I was 12 or 13 and my folks were jawling Sun City and having a bit of a gamble and a bit of a jawl, and Bryan Adams was there and they got me a ticket and they were like, cool, you're like old enough to go in there and go and do it, like behave yourself and have a good time. And I stood and watched Bryan Adams, obviously like I've got older brothers and parents and whatever, so I knew some of the music and I rocked out, man.
He's great.
I rocked out.
Look, I have to say, I'm a massive cornball, so I love any sort of proper legendary anthem. And Bryan Adams is that guy. He's like the anthem guy. So Summer of 69
18,
just does it for me.
With 18 Till I Die, that is my Bryan Adams song.
Okay, so you'll be like losing it tomorrow night.
I will be losing it. And then on Sunday, I'm going to watch the band Texas.
Oh, dude, I know that I heard that they were in town.
What is going on? Look at you.
Amazing. I cannot wait. Like, it's a weekend full of amazing music.
So when all these young people wander around in their like t-shirts, that now they sell like Metallica shirts and Iron Maiden shirts at H&M, It's like, come on,
I'm wearing one right now.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed that you rock an Iron Maiden shirt from time to time, Amanda. You know, you just assume that now it's being worn as fashion, Guns N' Roses shirts. But, like, some of you youngins are actually legitimately jawling the old school tunes. Like, you're more into Bryan Adams and Texas than I'll ever be.
Yeah, wow. I love a little bit of old stuff.
Which one is Texas? What? It's a lady singer, right?
Yeah, and they sing, like, the big hit was Summer Sun.
Oh, yes, the Summer Sun. I remember that one. I'm not going to put the poor audience through me trying to do a rendition of it, but I know that one.
No, like, I for me, I'm such a pop person.
Yeah.
That's all I listen to. Even if, like, we go to the 80s, that has always been it for me. So, Diana Ross pop, Michael Jackson pop, like, the poppier, the bubblegummy, the better.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, I'm like huge into metal, mostly from the 90s and 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Love hip hop, especially from the 90s and the first 3-4 years of the 2000 decade. It's really garbage subsequently, and I love drum and bass. And that's why I really appreciate Eminem, because I know a lot of people know him for the radio songs that he has 2 or 3 of on every album.
Uh-huh.
But like from an MC perspective, he battles, and like so many MCs, once they become famous, they don't battle anymore, because if you are famous as a rapper and everything's based on your reputation, especially the more testosterone fueled areas of hip hop,
yeah,
you get battled by a young up and comer unknown, and your reputation's forever tarnished. I mean, it's like you've already got the prize. You're famous. You're selling records. Your name is known. Why risk it by then continuing to battle? For me, MCs need to be able to battle. You need to be able to freestyle.
So it's funny, actually, rounding back to you asking about the new Eminem and Beyonce song. I will unashamedly admit, if Beyonce releases a song where she just breathes,
yeah,
just in,
she can read you a random page of
I
Moby
will love
Dick.
It. I will support it. I'm a stupid,
I'm
ridiculous
like that with
fan
Metallica,
like that.
Man. I'm like that with Metallica.
Literally, there was a clip of Beyonce's child, Blue Ivy, and she was gurgling on a record. Literally, she was making up words, and she called that rap. I was in it. I was like, yes, Blue Ivy, you carry on. You do that everything a shaka thing.
Best MC in the universe.
So I'm totally stupid when it comes to Beyonce. But when it comes to Eminem, I will steal this thought from someone else, because when I heard it, I was like, actually, this is true. I preferred Eminem when he was still on drugs.
Yeah.
Everything Eminem now, and sober, I'm like, no, where's the, I'm going to spit in your face, I'll punch
no,
you in the throat,
No, but
Eminem.
What about on his last album, Rap God? And
no.
Rap God was a great tune, and the Monster one with Rihanna, these are radio hits.
I like
and
old
Berserk,
Eminem,
but Berserk.
Like 12 Eminem was great.
Berserk.
These chicks don't
Purple
even
Hills.
Know the name of my band.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I appreciate the lyricism and that kind of stuff. And so the Marshall Mathers LP 2, the more recent one prior to this new one that's about to come out, like wasn't as catchy, didn't sound like D12, but he's doing 6, 7, 8 minute long songs where he's telling these incredible stories, and the lyrics are like just layers of clever on the lyrics. Everything's like a clever crafted joke. I just can sit there and listen to it and be like, I can listen to this dude talk about whatever he wants. But I'm the same as you with Beyonce. I'm willing to forgive just about anything. I will be honest and say I did not like the new single with Beyonce. I didn't like, it's just very, he's very sorry for himself on that track. And he has been doing a track or two like that on every album for the last 2 or 3 albums. A whole, oh no, like, you know, poor little me. Success ruined my life. Now here I am all by myself. Like it's a bit not self-deprecating, but it's a little bit like looking for sympathy. He has had a track like that on pretty much all of his last 3 albums,
mm-hmm.
but hopefully the whole album's not dominated by that.
But if I just have to be honest and really be a straight shooter with my thoughts and not be a Beyonce idiot, what are the lyrics even of the song?
He's going on about how it's all like a Jesus analogy. He walks on water, but he's not Jesus. He's just an ordinary person. And like,
the chorus is, I walk on water, but I ain't no Jesus. I walk on water, but only when it freezes. Duh, you'd walk on water when it freezes, because you can't walk on water.
But he's saying it's cold. Like he's only able to do that God complex stuff when everything around him is freezing and its life is difficult.
Okay, it's very deep then. Yeah, let's just deep. Go with that.
Anyway, so well, like moving away from Eminem.
I love that though, we're having this conversation.
The new album, okay, so where I was actually going with this, because I'm sure millions of listeners have now that don't care about Eminem either way have, tuned out.
Yeah.
Hip-hop at the moment, or what they're calling hip-hop at the moment, and like some younger people have got this thing of like, you don't get to decide what hip hop is. But if you have a bunch of guys with flutes and a tambourine and there's not an electric guitar or a big drum kit anywhere and they want to sing flute tambourine music while chanting in Krishna style, they can't just call it metal. There's certain things that have to be in place for it to be metal.
True.
Inside of the genre of metal, you can experiment and you can add this and add that and have a guy with a didgeridoo, but it can't be metal unless it does certain things. Genres are in order so that people who haven't heard the music yet can get a sense of what sort of thing it is.
Yeah.
So what they're calling hip-hop these days, these guys like Little Yachty and Little Uzi Vert and Little Pump.
I can't.
The lyrics, the words that they're saying, if you can understand them, the mumble rap, if you can understand them or you can literally find a lyric video that tells you what they're saying, they don't rhyme.
Yeah.
So the lyrics are not really spoken. They're kind of mumble sung.
Mm-hmm.
They don't rhyme. So for me, rap has got to be like a combination of singing and talking, and the words must predominantly rhyme. And now you're rapping. That's surely what rapping is.
So this is actually...
These dudes aren't rapping.
I think you have a good point, and I want to bring in, I'll call him the expert in for this morning. Let's get to our guest, Dominic Neal. We'll pick his brain about a whole bunch of things. And just before that, here's a little taste of what you can expect with Dominic Neal. Here's a little clip of his song. It's titled Out of My League. The man himself is here. The guy behind Out of My League, Mr. Dominic Neal. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Yay. Thank Welcome you so much for stopping it. By.
Thank you. No, of course. It's always a pleasure. I love being on non-radio as well because I can say what I want. I feel like when I'm on lame old traditional sort of platforms, and I know Gaz, if he ever hears this, he's going to love me saying this because I think he's like the advocate for it. But I love just being able to say what's on my mind. You know,
the only damn reason that I can feature on radio ever at all because I can't not say what's on my mind.
The only reason I have a job, particularly, I'm just
No, for sure. I just think there's so much red tape, and this is cool.
That's awesome.
This is cool.
So we're going to, like, I find it so cool that you are involved in so many different things. You are putting out these awesome, awesome songs.
Thank you.
And with that, you can now add to this whole musical conversation we were having this morning.
100%. And I was sitting in the room next door listening. So I was listening very intently. First of all, I have to be very honest. I think Eminem screams at me when I listen to him. I just feel like I'm being bombarded with his problems. I struggle with that.
Oh, okay. Deal with the guy with Eminem
enough,
tattoo.
Man. I completely understand that.
But at the same way, I can really appreciate an incredible pianist is the same way I can appreciate Eminem, you know? And there's a documentary, and I forget what it's called, but all the big dogs are like speaking about the best MCs in the business. And hands down, the one sort of thread of what comes out of it is Eminem's the best in the business, and he's the best that there's ever been as an MC, as which you were saying,
being able to
as a lyricist,
throw down
as this person with flow, like, and hands down, you got people like Jay-Z saying that. And look, Jay-Z's my personal favorite, but incredible.
So, what do you listen to?
It's such a, I mean, I get asked that quite a lot. I listen to everything, and that's so cliche. It's such a cliche response. You know, I listen to everything. Like, like music's my luck. No, but I really love everything. But I think I'm also the same as you. I'm a pop. I love this. I've got this fascination for pop music and what makes a hit record.
Mm.
And I think also the lines have been blurred in terms of genres as what is popular and what is pop music. You know, I think. In 2008 when Swedish House Mafia like took over the world, you know, everyone was like, oh, this is EDM, and I'm like, no, it's pop. You know, it's pop music. And pop
so
is
if people so do you define pop by when loads of people dig it?
I define pop by a song being commercially viable.
Okay.
Essentially.
So Metallica's Into Sandman, which was like number one for like ever when it came out in the 90s, would that have then become pop because it was number one on like mainstream radio
charts? And I think if you looked at similar hits at the time, that was the space pop music was in, you know. And now if you look at the charts, rock is nowhere to be seen. So I think different times, but I think if a song is commercially viable and it's in the mainstream, it's pop music.
So you like it or not. About sound, it's not about a sound, no. It's about breaking through into mainstream culture.
That's what I personally believe, yeah. Yeah. And look, obviously pop music, the sound of pop music has become a thing. You know, you can also listen to a song and go, that's got a pop sound.
Mm.
But for me, I think people are trying to stroke their own egos by saying, no, this is not pop. This is
they're trying to be
Ukrainian
like
country. Yeah.
It's like Latvian flute folk.
For sure. Funny enough, I'm going to Latvia in February, but good one.
Flute folk's actually pretty good. Check out the flute folk while you're there. It's really
amazing.
Good. Yeah.
Gord recommends
it. They draw it better than anyone.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I just think people, I think a lot of it's an ego thing and a lot of it's a...
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 25.
Okay. So you are, as I would have expected, looking at you, quite young.
Thank you.
So Amanda, who's even younger, she's going to go Joel, as you heard now. She's going to go Joel, Bryan Adams, and Texas.
Yeah.
And she's well excited. Like, how are you? Are you into, like, a lot of older, like, literally, like, before your time, music from when you were a small kid or even before you were born?
So, I think anyone like me who grows up in a household where there is a lot of music, you sort of adopt what your parents listen to. So obviously there's that, but I went through a serious stage of sort of early high school days of Guns N' Roses and Led Zeppelin, and and I think it was almost like a rite of passage to educate myself of, before I could really speak about knowing music and loving music, that I felt like it's something I needed to go through. So I was watching the Use Your Illusions, like, DVDs 100 times over, and, you know,
those spandex,
it's incredible,
man.
And like, also what blew me away about that, the Guns N' Roses tours, they shot it in Tokyo, and the crowd, like, you just can't beat a Japanese crowd. They are like so in it from the word go.
Yes,
they like robotically clap along and sing along to every song. It just blew my mind. And the Japan in the 90s
know what the words mean, but they know the words. No. Like,
but it's Axl Rose and Slash, and they don't care, and they're there. So
yeah, and they'll be here to support, and that's it. So does this manner of thinking then influence the way you make music? Do you look at trends and go with that? Do you look at, oh, DJ Kent is hot right now, and so I'd love to be on a song with him? Or do you really just make music?
I'm way more intuitive than that, I think. I think what I try and do is, and it was Reason, I think, that said this to me once. He was like, writer's block is the best time, or the time you're not writing is the best time, is because you listen. And I think that's one of the reasons I religiously listen to music. Even if music is always on, and I try and listen to these popular things, because even subliminally, they're going to end up influencing what comes out of my mouth when I'm in studio or whatever. So I try and be a sponge at all times. And I think that's the way I do it pretty naturally, I think, when I'm in studio, is that because I'm listening to this, that, and the other that's huge right now, parts of that's going to come with me. So I'm not as methodical as people think I am. I'm a little more just get in studio and write something, and if it works, it works, and I hope it works. Really, that's kind of the way I go about it. Yeah,
well, it seems to be working. I mean, how have things progressed for you over the last couple of years, and like, what do you think is like the most exciting, what is the coolest part of having gotten to where you are now musically? What is the raddest difference in your life now than, say, what, 5 years ago?
What blows my mind, and this is something, I mean, I get goosebumps speaking about it, is that you will struggle, and you'd have to search a lot, mm-hmm. like all over the place, to find a person who has not heard Love You Still. And that, for me, is what blows, like, me aside, like, sure, I'd love it if people would say featuring Dominic Neal a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Those are the smaller things, and the music's always going to outlive me. I'm going to die one day, and Love You Still going to be around for people to listen to. I don't know if it's people are still going to listen to it, but it's going to be there.
Yeah,
I mean, Apple Music, whatever, it's going to be there. Mm. But that's the mind blowing thing for me is, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, people would ask me, "What do I do?" I said, "I'd sing." They go, "What song do you sing?" And I'd be like, "Well, you know, this and that. You might not have heard it, but whatever." But now, like, hands down, if I mention Love You Still, people have heard it, and that's mind blowing.
How did that come about, actually?
I was sort of flirting with the idea of writing for some of the people at The Voice. I'd just within meetings and stuff with Universal Music, and I'd signed it on to publishing as a writer, and I submitted a whole bunch
of... That's where the real money's at, yeah. I heard.
And that's the steady money. That's the 30, 40 years of earning money. That's where it comes from, you know. Yeah.
You get a percentage of all the sales?
Yeah, publishing is, it's not even sales, it's just plays and usage, and I mean, it's, publishing is very complicated.
What sort of percentage are we talking about, like, majority?
Depends how much of the song you earn, you know.
I'm here for that party, actually. I know, like, I need to write a song. I need to do something.
Yeah. So, I'd submitted a whole bunch of music which was supposed to be used for the first season of The Voice. You know, as the guys come out the competition, they look for songs for the people who win and the people who end up getting signed by Universal. And I'd submitted a file of probably about 30 songs or something, 25 ideas or rough ideas. And one of them was the song called Who Says, which was just me and the guitar. And nothing ever came of it on the Voice side. But Kent came into the Universal offices and was like, I need a song. I've got 9 tracks. He made the cardinal sin of announcing that the album's coming out without finishing it.
Yeah.
And he just said, I need a song. And I always hold him to this. He said, I don't just need a track. I need that one. I need a single. He says, I've heard Who Says. I love the idea. Let's get into studio. And we went into studio the next day. And I think the following Wednesday, I think it was a Thursday, the following Wednesday, the album went to print and off it went. And it was mind blowing. I can't even tell you. I mean, when I heard the track, I knew there was something there. You know, if you've been in the game for a while and you follow music, there's as I said again, there's this intuition that something is there. There's something special there. But what it ended up doing is just, yeah.
Do you feel
crazy?
Do you love the space you're in now? Because I'm sure you were in Idols in 2010, you made it to like the top 7.
Yeah.
When you don't win something like that, you're like, well, shucks, what's happening now? And it's years in, you have to steadily work your pace. And now you just have this like crazy, crazy rise.
Yeah. You know what?
It's still continuing.
I think there's a lot that I still want to achieve. And that's why I always look forward. And I also don't try and set like two concrete goals. I just try and put my head down, work hard, and try and keep improving, and all the other stuff will come. But I think it's incredible, and you know what, I have worked hard. You know, I left Idols going, you know what, I don't think I'm ready to enter the music industry at the level I want to enter it. You know, I finished 7th. That was great. It was a great introduction to what it could be like.
You were what, 20 years old?
Yeah, 19. Yeah. 19. And and then you just kind of keep plodding along. And I went to study and I worked for this little record label and that little record label and try to just learn the industry in and out. And I guess now, particularly as a writer, people seem to really have faith in me, and that's comforting, and it's cool. It's a pat on the back, you know.
My buddy Sean from Seether in the States. And he's been through a lot.
I know a bit of his story
personally,
yeah,
etc. But he's now doing really nicely, also ghostwriting. I mean, he's just a monstrous songwriter. You know, his own stuff, the Seether stuff, and prior to that the Sarin Gas stuff, is very like heavy, on the heavier end of grunge. But he can write bloody anything.
Yeah.
And Seether went through a really popular phase, like right at the top of the alternate rock game, and then they kind of went through a dip and went through a sort of more commercial phase, trying to do that, and now they're in a space where they can do really what they want.
Yeah.
Like the last two albums have really just been, you can tell they're having fun, and they haven't had the commercial sense, they haven't had the number one rock chart songs, but they seem to really be enjoying playing and making new music, because he's able to earn that income and have that, like you said, the publishing rights and the royalties rights. I mean, he's writing for, I can't for the life of me remember, but one of the biggest country acts in the States now is like a country boy band. It's like five dudes that sing country together, and it's poppy as hell, but it's massive, and he's writing like a bunch of their music. So you can perform one thing and you can create music that wouldn't suit your own performance style and wouldn't suit your own brand, and let other people perform it. And that's where you can win on 100%.
And I can completely relate to that. You know, I think I've been in studio the last couple of days for one of the other Voice finalists. I wrote on the Craig Lucas's album.
Oh, snap.
As well.
Yeah. Stronger. Is that what the album's called?
Smother. Yeah, closer. And I wrote a song called Heart Exposed on there with him. And it really does give you freedom. And I can completely relate to that. So when I get up, so I was in studio yesterday with very much specifically for someone in particular, a guy called Armand Hubert. And we have, it's almost like you write to a brief, even if it's not on paper, you kind of know the space you go into, and it just gives me so much freedom, and I can completely relate. As I'm in studio next week with a producer, and it's like clean slate.
Have you written any stuff like in that process that's miles away from what you would perform yourself or write for yourself?
So yes, but I think it was more in February. I was in Germany writing for Universal Publishing over there. And they put us in a room and we got this thick brief document, which was just the most bizarre.
You and other writers.
Yeah, it was two other guys, me, a producer and another writer. And
what does that mean? Like, do they say, we need
literally, so it
love
was,
song?
It was for... basically, so it was for a girl called Lena who won Eurovision, the Eurovision Song Contest in 2010. And she's huge in Germany still. She does arena tours and whatever. And she said, and then she hadn't released an album since 2012. So she's with Universal Publishing and she's bizarrely not with Universal on the label side. But besides the point, and they put together this brief document for you. And it's available to the public, actually. If you go online, you can check it out and you can happy to submit songs.
And then we submit songs and we make money. This is our 2018 goal.
We both
am
suck.
I giving away the secrets?
We both suck at singing. But we could come up with something for someone else to sing.
Telling you, this is my.
If we're just able to more or less give them an indication, because we're so far off. At least I know I am with singing that I wouldn't be able to sing it to the person to say, okay, you need to sing it better, but it goes a bit like this. Yes. They'll be like, no, that's awful. I'm like, no, in my mind, it's great.
We'll invite Dominic in again, and then we'll just get more. You were saying
it's great, man. But the bizarre thing about that for me was how vague it was. So they have this brief, and then they give you like references. Basically, they're like, mm-hmm. "We're looking for songs in this." And at the time, it was like "Shape of You" by Ed Sheeran, like the biggest songs in the world. They're like, "Yeah, something like this." I'm like, "Well, that's. I mean, we'd all love to write something like that, you know." But it was a cool experience. And then I ended up like writing this bizarre sort of teen pop, like proper like female pop. Upbeat thing. I've got the recording somewhere still of my voice on that. I don't know if they ever ended up using it, but yeah, that's one of the scenarios I've been in. But on the flip side as well, I've been in writing sessions where I end up just writing what's supposed to be a guide vocal mm-hmm. and they end up going, nah, we want that vocal and you're going to feature on the track. And I've got a track coming out in February with one of the guys in Europe that I worked with and it was just supposed to be me coming in writing, and then they'd find
you recorded it so that someone else could
for
take
sure,
that
and they loved the vocal too much, so they're gonna keep me on the track. Yeah,
that's cool. Are you like gonna do a David Hasselhoff and be like monstrous in some country?
Look, like I think the last person I want to compare myself
is. No, but I mean, like, he's huge in Germany.
No, 100%. And he did nothing anywhere else
in
the world.
Yeah, nothing anywhere else. So he's like a TV star everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And the biggest pop singer ever.
In Germany,
he's like the George Michael, only obviously still alive, but he's like the George Michael of Germany, or like one of the proper heavyweights.
Yeah.
They're like, screw Baywatch. Like...
I'm big in Beijing.
We like the Hoff when he sings, and his videos are porno as hell.
Yeah, so I'm going back to Germany in Feb again for another 2 weeks to write and whatever. So let's see, who knows what happens, man? Who knows what happens?
I'd be big in Germany.
Yeah. So Mfundo on Twitter wants to ask you what you think about, as arbitrary as this question is, these are our listeners, what you think about the song Man's Not Hot by Big Shaq.
Yes.
That for me is the epitome of a hit song. And it's the epitome of the movement of a hit song and this weird bizarre blueprint that doesn't exist. This
comedy drum and bass.
Vocals. Exactly. So I say to every, and this is what I said, don't tell me if something works, it works, and you can't take that away from the guy. It doesn't lie, you know. So I think it's cool. I think there's space for it, obviously. Do I think he'll ever have another hit again? Nope.
Because the mechanism is only funny once, right?
For sure. And I think grime is going through a sort of a bit of a renaissance. So I think it was all this combination. It was this, I don't know, it was blind luck, but it worked.
What's funny though is that it was the result of a ongoing comedy thing that he was doing on that BBC channel that plays jungle music and drum and bass and grime and all of that, where he was this parody MC, London MC, and then he also is another guy. So he's Big Shaq, and his other character is called, I think, Quest or something like that. I stand to be corrected. No, they were having a beef. So he would like pop in once a week as one character or the other.
That's brilliant.
And they were beefing each other. And it was like just a comedy skit that this dude would have on for 15 minutes once a week on his show.
Yeah.
You know, like the update on the beef between Big
like
Shaq.
The quintessential grime.
Yeah. Artist. And he's the two different dudes' style is obviously different. So if you actually go and watch, if you are interested in Man's Not Hot and Big Shaq, go and have a look at some of the stuff that preceded that song becoming so big. It's actually really, really funny because both dudes cannot rap. They just, the lyrics are so bad, but they try to diss each other.
Man.
It's funny.
So also, I love that everyone is chiming in on this musical conversation. This is like, we have you in studio, we play your music, and now we just need to pick your brain with all of this. Larkade on WeChat wants to ask you, what do you think about Fall Out Boy, of all things?
I was a huge Fall Out Boy fan growing up. There was an album called From Under the Cork Tree, which was unbelievable, man. That was the one that was sort of Dance Dance and Sugar We're Going Down. That was sort of, that's very much when they got thrust into the popular music sort of space. It's horrible to see where they've gone now. If you listen to some of their new stuff, it's just bizarre. And the lead singer, whatever, I forget his name, he went off and did a solo project, which was like bubblegum pop. It was scary. But yeah, man, I just, I'm a huge fan of theirs. They did From Under the Cork Tree, and then I think Folie à Deux or whatever, the other follow-up album. Those were, for me, I listened to those albums broken, up and down. I think vocally as well, I took a lot from where he sort of went in a melodic space. But incredible band, and I definitely grew up listening to them 100%. And every now and then I get a bit of a nostalgia and I go back and listen to the albums.
We've
again.
All been through those random phases. I did go through a Fall Out Boy phase as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Bullet for My Valentine. Yeah, just.
I'm so glad I skipped that one.
Thank you.
There was a Coke Zero Fest. I don't know.
Yes, Bullet for My Valentine.
They were well, yeah, and then they were supposed to come the one time. No, they were supposed to come to my Coke Zero Fest, and they actually cancelled and ended up playing at Oppie like 3 or 4 years after
that's
that.
That's right.
You've never seen someone so happy. That, because if you looked at the rest of the lineup, it was like the epitome of, it was Snow Patrol, love it. Panic at the Disco, love it. Oasis. Love it even more.
Yeah.
And then it was like them. And I was just like, but also you have this,
but, I mean,
you have
they
this
were
horrible
massive.
No, they were massive. And but again, I mean, I can appreciate
girl metal
it.
At its finest.
Yeah. And I was,
girl metal. No, I'm serious. Like a lot of metal, and I don't like, men are welcome to listen to it and whatever. I'm not trying to say, I'm not trying
to
say
listen to it.
Gender, gender stereotype. This is your role, male person. You must listen to that testosterone fueled music. And that is for you, women. Like, loads of my guy friends loved Bullet for My Valentine. But some metal, like Asking Alexandria and Bullet for My Valentine, is designed for 16-year-old girls to go completely fucking wild for the singers and the vocals. It's all about heartbreak and love, and like he's the bad boy that you want to tame.
Yeah, yeah,
and
100%.
It's designed. I mean, like, there is not a lot of what's in Lamb of God is designed to make teenage girls want to buy the record. So the point is, like, while they probably wouldn't have sat very comfortably sonically in that lineup, some of the same fans would have definitely had some crossover appeal. Because
100%.
You'd have had a lot of teenage girls and guys and whoever into Snow Patrol who probably also would have loved Four Words to Choke Upon by Bullet for My Valentine, which was every teenager in that era's like metal, you know, stand up and be pissed off with an X song.
I must say, I think that was one of the key moments, I think, in, for me, Snow Patrol singing. It wasn't Chasing Cars. It was the other big hit, Run, I think, that Leona Lewis ended up covering as well. My goodness. And, you know, it was, I think it ended up raining and he was crying and the whole crowd was singing it and, like, everyone was crying. I think that for me was, honestly, I remember it so vividly. It was incredible, actually, that now that we bring it up.
Yeah, it makes me think about what Amanda was saying about going to Bryan Adams, and I mentioned it was my first concert literally in like 1994. What was your first proper concert?
Oh, geez, this is hectically embarrassing. Shaggy.
Oh, dude, Shaggy rules! Shagger! No, there's nothing embarrassing.
I don't
we
know.
Own that shit, dude.
He actually is the original Man's Not Hot. I have not heard Shaggy's name.
So I went, I was in like
Shaggy grade, rules. No, like, one will disrespect Shaggy or I'm walking out of this room.
I was in grade 4 at the time, and I remember on the way to school listening to radio, and he was having an interview, and they said, "What's the one thing you love about South Africa?" And he was like, "Listen, man, I had so much appetizer. I'm going to start pissing appetizer before I leave here." And I don't know why that stayed with me, but that was literally, that was
the
one thing he loved about South Africa. This dude's come from the Caribbean. He's like, there should be so many other things that he likes about South Africa and Africa, and it's appetizer.
I remember
10 years old
when
listening
his first,
to Shaggy.
Like,
okay.
Carolina, the first, before It Wasn't Me, which was like 10, 15 years later, like this revival hit. When he first came out with O Carolina, I was in primary school, so I was probably in like, I don't know, what do you call it, class 6, grade 6, standard 4. Uh-huh. And like Shaggy
y'all
was,
were very like worldly old, kids I'm old listening ass, to this music.
So Shaggy came out and it was like massive and I really liked it because it almost had a bit of a rap flavor to it, but this whole reggae vibe, and I you know, it was hugely commercially pop successful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And obviously, like you say, there's a reason for that. Good or bad, it was big and people loved it. So I bought the Shaggy album, saved up my pocket money, went and bought the Shaggy album.
Crazy.
And I got, like, there was that one single. There was Oh Carolina and the rest was garbage. But I digged it. And there was a song on there called All Virgins. And, like, he was literally just singing about how he likes to bone virgins. Like, virgins sure. are his jewel. And I was like,
Virgins are his jewel.
And I was like 13. And I was like, all the virgins, oh, big old the virgins. And I was like, I was just loving that shit now. It's like this pop music, man. Your kids because you think it's safe. It's not.
No.
Especially these days.
I also remember the moment I realized what It Wasn't Me was about. Because, like, I mean, I was 10 years old. Like, yeah. I had no, it was just It Wasn't Me, you know. But I also remember, like, about 4 or 5 years later when I'd now puberty had hit and the acne was strong, I was like, holy shit.
He was boning. In
yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. Infidelity.
See, yeah. It's a song aimed at children about the virtues of cheating and how to get away with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what I'm saying. You guys lead very colorful lives. I was sitting at home, mind my own business.
What joy celebration, hey? Are you going to tell us that's the.
I was in church singing hymns. Just Britney Spears-ing it up as well.
And I've said this before on another show. Now you're into different kinds of hymns.
I mean, that's good. Like, I'm going.
What do you have to applaud him for
that?
You
still like a good hymn.
It's clever. It's witty.
Okay. Would you see when people don't laugh and they go, "Well, that was yes," and
hey, for effort, that, it's
that
fine.
Was witty. It's witty.
It was funny the first time.
Well, let us class it up by rounding this interview off. Dominic, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me. This is great. Talking shit is one of my
Where can number. People check out more of and you? Where is, can people see you live? Where can people get your music?
Yeah. Like, so everything on social media is I am Dominic Neal, DominicNeill. I love a bit of Instagram and pictures of my dogs and stuff and Insta stories. I Casual. Talk probably more shit on there than I did right now, which is hard to believe. And please just go and listen to that album. It's called Out of My League. I'm super proud of it. You know, you can listen to it and never listen to it again, but I think the beauty of it is that people are hopefully starting to listen to my music. So you can get it everywhere digitally, Apple Music, Deezer, iTunes, Google Play, this, you know, it goes. The list goes on. But yeah, and hopefully into the new year. As I said, I'm off to Germany for a month in February, and hopefully
Latvia.
Yeah, Latvia as well. I've got a friend who studies there, so I'm going to go visit him. It's my third time there. Definitely recommend it.
Yeah.
Not for the flute or whatever, just because it's a jaw.
Just because you haven't checked it out. You'll be sold on Latvian flute.
Anyway, and yeah, and when I'm back, hopefully, you know, hitting the festival scene and more music. Definitely pushing the international envelope as well. And I've got a big international release in February. Hopefully, fingers crossed that goes well. And awesome. Then who knows? Who knows? There's a whole bunch of music that I've written on that's going to be coming out. So it might not be me, but if you like something, and maybe just go and search writers and maybe my name
pops up.
Listen,
you'll be sitting at home counting your money, so you'll be fine.
Yeah,
that is it.
Yeah, but thank you so much.
You're dope.
Thank you for having me, man.
Awesome. So Dominic Neal with 2 L's.
Yeah.
I am Dominic Neal on social media.
That's the one.
Instagram and the like. Check it out on Apple Music, Deezer, anything and everywhere.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Dude, so cool to have you.
Mr. Gordlaws.
Yeah.
That's the show.
Is that the show?
Oh, yeah. We have
Holy shit, it's 8 minutes past 6.
I know. We have Gareth's interview with John Flismas coming up straight after this.
Oh, that's a fascinating one.
Oh, he's a treat.
Both of those dudes are interesting.
They speak about everything.
The weird thing is every time I see John Flismas, he's in a cast. He's got on crutches. Every time I see him, I don't know what he does.
Given the way he lives his life, I'm not really surprised.
No holes barred. But literally, I've seen him about 3 times in the last year, and he's always got crutches.
Sia Sangweni, thank you for manning the fort so bravely for the first half an hour when no one was here with you.
What a delight of a show this morning. Amanda, thank you so much to everyone else as well. And thank you so much for listening as well. That's it. The Gareth Cliff Show for this morning.
What
done
a
and dusted. Gareth's interview with John Flismas coming up straight after this. But other than that, we'll see you.
Party hard and party safe.
Exactly. Chat to you on Monday.
Yep.
This is CliffCentral.com.